Good afternoon. Happy Wednesday. It is Wednesday, the last day of March. Yes, March 31st, 2021. I am Hank Jones. You are listening to Hank Jones Polysports here on Global Patriot Radio, part of Blog Talk Radio. Yes, indeed. Every day we've got something going on. I'll tell you more about that in a little bit. If you want to interact with the show, there are several ways to do that. Of course, the best way, in case you want to talk, is call us up, 319-527-6706. You can also log in on Blog Talk Radio, look for live, or just look up Global Patriot Radio, find the show. You can get in the chat room, interact that way. Indy Hawk KB is in the chat room right now. You can email me anytime, hjpsports1980@gmail.com. You can also go to Facebook. I have a Facebook page. I'm on Twitter, at hpolysports. That's often how I interact with Sue from New Mexico, who is in on the phones right now, I believe, as well as Hawkeye Mike, Brother Tommy, and some others. Every Wednesday, we are here. Every Monday, Vito and Al, the Vito Esposito Show, featuring Big Al. They talk about, well, here's a clue, Mamma Mia, No Sharia. That should give you an idea of what they talk about. Every Tuesday, Eric the Kafir is here with Radio Free Kafiristan. Starting to get a theme, folks. Thursdays, Paul Sutliff with the Sutliffian Report. Paul goes around the globe and knows people around the globe, and he'll talk about a lot of the things that are happening in our government, especially like the other two shows, as it relates to the folks that are trying to institute Sharia law in our country. Fridays, Andrew Harrod is in with Conservative Casual Friday, a.k.a. Islam in Focus. He had a good call on there a couple of that last Friday, the Friday before. He had a good caller on that was talking about what happens in our mainstream denominational churches in this country, and it's frightening. Like is the way they literally support the World Council of Churches and the National Council of Churches, and what you think your mainstream clergy are about, probably not so much. Every Saturday from 10 p.m. to midnight, Minister Usama Dakduk and the beautiful Christie revealing the truth about Islam, and that they do. Sundays, Eric is back with Real Interfaith Dialogue. Compare, contrast, but in a not-so-confrontational setting, although that's why you do have to add an app for that one. You can't just go in there. You have to add the app. So that's what happens here on Blog Talk Radio. Mrs. Hank is over in Hank Haven, the adjunct to Electric Hankland Studios, if you will. She's typing away. She's really fast at typing. She, my dad, and Brother Tommy are the three fastest I've ever seen typing. Unbelievable. So that's what's going on right this second. Got some deaths this past week. I hate reporting these, but this one's kind of, you know, former head coach, football head coach Howard Schnellenberger passed away last Saturday. He was 87. He had head coaching stints at several places, Miami, Florida, Louisville, Oklahoma, Florida Atlantic. He's most noted for turning around the Miami program. When he came in, they were literally on the brink of canceling that program. School, honchos, alums, et cetera. 10 years later, he took them to the national championship. It was a voted on. It was a mythical national championship, if you will, but still, nonetheless, they were called the national champs. I remember they upset Nebraska in that 1984 Orange Bowl for the 1983 season. Indy Hawk KB, I remember he and I talking way back when, talking about the best teams in the country over given years, and I was talking about, well, maybe last year it could have been Auburn or probably not Miami, and he says, whoa, nobody's going to tell me Nebraska wasn't the best team last year. He was absolutely right. The 1983 Nebraska team was amazing, but, hey, Miami pulled it off, and so Miami was the national champion. It's funny, they got off to a huge lead. What he took to Miami, what Schnellenberger took was a, number one, he locked down the Miami area recruiting-wise, and he also got other national recruits to buy in. But he took a pro offense, basically. Nebraska was – defense was built to stop teams in the Big Eight at the time, which were basically option teams, triple option, wishbone, semi-formation. They weren't passing teams. Miami threw literally like a pro team. Nebraska actually came back that game and then missed on a two-point conversion. Actually, Schnellenberger actually started out as his first head coaching job was in the NFL with the Baltimore Colts. He got into it with owner Bob Irsay on the sidelines in his last game. Irsay said, "When are you going to start Burke Jones?" And for some reason, they got into it, and Schnellenberger was fired after the game. He then went to Miami. Had a heck of a career there. He went to Louisville. He went to the USFL, to the Spirit of Miami. But they then announced they were going to go to a fall schedule, and the Miami franchise owner said, "Not against the Dolphins, I ain't." So he moved the team to Orlando. They went back to a spring season, but Schnellenberger had opted not to go. So he ended up going to Louisville and turned them around. If you'll remember, they were kind of a downtrodden team. They ended up, before he left, winning a Fiesta Bowl over Alabama. He then went to Oklahoma. That only lasted a year, and then he finished his career at Florida Atlantic. He got them from Division I AA to Division I. So, yeah, by the way, during his college career, he only went to 6 bowl games, but he won every single one of them. So not a bad bowl record. Former FBI agent and author and talk show host and public speaker G. Gordon Liddy, he passed away yesterday. He was 90. He had suffered from Parkinson's. He gained notoriety, of course, during the Watergate scandal. He, along with E. Howard Hunt, orchestrated the break-in at DNC headquarters in the famed Watergate Hotel in D.C. That was back in 1972. He actually orchestrated several other operations and break-ins, et cetera, that were designed really to discredit the DNC and Democrat office holders and candidates. Who knew? He didn't really even have to go that far. Yeah, he also orchestrated a break-in of the psychiatrist who treated Daniel Ellsberg back in 1971. Ellsberg, for those that remember, he released the Pentagon Papers to the New York Times in 1971. I actually heard G. Gordon Liddy speak at the University of Iowa back in 1983. Fascinating. The radicals in attendance were trying to harass him and humiliate him. It didn't go well. For those that remember, G. Gordon Liddy was not exactly one to play along with the jeers and the taunts and the chants. Quickly turned it around, left most of them speechless. A lot of them left because they were tired of getting owned by the guy. He was great, great speaker, very intelligent man. Very organized in his thoughts. And then last Sunday, we saw the passing of Didier Ratsiraka. Now, most of you probably wouldn't know who that is. He was the former dictator of Madagascar. He died of cardiac arrest at the age of 84. The reason I bring him up, he was unseated in 2001 by a gentleman named Mark Ravalomanana, who was a self-made millionaire, started out selling ice cream and dairy products from his bike. I went to Madagascar in the spring of 2005 and actually met then President Ravalomanana. He was also the vice president of the FJKM Church, the Church of Jesus Christ in Madagascar, as it's called in English. Didier Ratsiraka basically hung around for a while. His big thing was that Ravalomanana couldn't be much more than a peasant because he only spoke English. And Malagasy, he didn't speak French. He was sophisticated. Mark Ravalomanana was brilliant enough to know that English is the international language of business and of tourism. Unfortunately, he went out in a coup, and so the country is sort of back to third world governance. Last Thursday, we lost Larry McMurtry, also of heart failure, also at 84. Among his credits, Lonesome Dove. The Last Picture Show, which was a great movie with Jeff Bridges and Timothy Bottoms and not Van Johnson. What was his name? Anyway, he won a Best Supporting Actor Oscar. Cloris Leachman won her Oscar for that movie. And then he also wrote Brokeback Mountain, so yeah, whatever on that one. Finally, we lost actress Jessica Walter last week. She was 80 now. Cause was unknown. She was most recently in the shows Good Girls and American Housewife. She was also nominated for an Emmy for her role in Arrested Development. He actually won an Emmy for a role back in the 70s for a show called Amy Prentice. I remember when it was on. I never watched it. Two of her most noted roles. One, she was in a little movie with Matt Dillon called Flamingo Kid. She played sort of like an older woman, Mrs. Robinson type. Then she was also in Play Misty for Me, if anyone remembers that, from 1971. She was the stalker who sort of basically stalked Clint Eastwood. She basically invented the role that Glenn Close played in Fatal Attraction without boiling a rabbit. So, yeah, those are some recent sad happenings. Welcome T. Bodie also to the phones. Politics is, first of all, I want to recap a little bit of last week. Remember, I had on Jim Hoft of the Gateway Pundit. Thanks to T. Bodie for that little introduction, by the way. Remember, he talked about several things. He talked about voter fraud and irregularities. The trucks on video bringing boxes of ballots in. The videos of people, poll workers, scanning the same ballots multiple times. Georgia, in their presidential runoff, recounting the same ballots using the same methods, not authenticating ballots. In other words, you know, doing the same thing so that they could get the same results. Brought a lot of, you know, stuff that we sort of have heard about, but what it did is it led to the next thing we talked about, big tech censorship. Jim talked about, you know, they've been off of Twitter for a few months. They've been off of Facebook a little longer than that. He talked about their drop in traffic. Now, for Gateway Pundit, a drop in traffic on Facebook and Twitter is huge. Facebook carries about 20% of the world's internet traffic, believe it or not. And Gateway Pundit relies on an advertising model for their support, which, of course, is badly hurt when you have less internet traffic. So not having that, he said that about 25 to 30% of their traffic, if I remember correctly, and now it's about 3% of their traffic. So that, you know, try taking that hit. We talked about courts that were dismissing suits on the very flimsiest of pretexts. You know, one thing would they say you were too early with the filing, then you're too late. You don't have proof. You know, things like they didn't adhere to existing law in certain states or using illegal means to alter their law or their procedure. Interestingly, you know, there have been a recent allowance of some lawsuits to move forward. We briefly touched on that. And we remember we got disconnected or he got disconnected. But talking about some recent lawsuits that are suddenly moving forward. And then we talk about states that are tightening up their voter laws. Notice, by the way, some states are being threatened now with loss of economic activity, for lack of a better term. Georgia is being threatened with stuff like we'll pull this or we'll pull that or we won't relocate there because of your recent law tightening up voter voting restrictions. No, it's not voting restrictions. It's tightening up election law, election procedure. They turn it into a situation or what they say is it's suppression. You're not suppressed by law. You're suppressed if you don't go or if you're prevented from going. Nothing prevents people from getting ID. Now, they say things like, oh, poor people in rural areas, code for black people and Hispanic people. Therein lies the inherent racism of those people. The immediate assumption is that black people and Hispanic people and other minorities can't get ID or don't have transportation to go to polls or whatever. How racist is that in and of itself? They're saying, oh, these poor people. They're making assumptions. I mean, it's meaningless argument, but they still do it. Other economic threats that have come up since then, stock backing down to a threat of NCAA, lawsuits, Dominion, for instance, including Gateway Pundit and Jim Hoft, being sued for the, I don't know if he didn't mention the suit, but every other Dominion suit has been $1.3 billion. Just those things. And we talk about what we're seeing is beyond ideology. Jim actually said it's sanctioned evil. He's absolutely right. I mean, this is not a matter of just ideology. This is evil when you start talking about people that are are trying to change not just law or change our system, but change our planet, and but also by suppression, also by coercion, by removal of rights, by aggression, if you will. By the way, there was an article by Jim's brother Joe on the GatewayPundit.com site. It now highlights 9 instances of Trump vote totals that were being reduced by roughly 400,000 votes. These were totals that did not correspond to votes for Biden. They were just original totals for Trump that got changed. The article points out, had they remained, it would have meant Trump victories in both Georgia and Pennsylvania. Guess what that would have meant? That would have meant no AP Biden, because President Donald Trump would have been reelected. It's accompanied by videos as well, depicting some of the events on live TV. I suggest head over to GatewayPundit.com. You'll get the full story and the videos. Jim wrote another article on his site, by the way, a smear campaign that's being undertaken by the New York Times against Florida Congressman Matt Gaetz. If you were to read just the mainstream media accounts, you'd be under the impression that Representative Gaetz has been dating a bunch of underage girls and he's under investigation. Jim pointed out the New York Times report is completely false. Gaetz is not the target of the investigation, but rather a victim of a blackmail or extortion attempt by a former Department of Justice official named David McGee. David McGee now works at the Beggs and Lane law firm in Florida's Panhandle. Evidently what happened, and this was on Tucker Carlson's show, David McGee called Matt Gaetz's father in an attempt to extort money from that family in exchange for making sex trafficking allegations go away. So Gaetz and his father went to the FBI. They had Gaetz's father meet with McGee while wearing a wire. And now Gaetz is demanding that the FBI and the Department of Justice release the transcripts of those conversations. It included an upfront demand of $4.5 million as part of a total of $25 million. Gaetz basically said, look, the New York Times is running this story, one, to discredit him, but two, to circumvent the investigation of McGee. McGee is being investigated for this. By running this, they try and take the heat off. I turn it around. So, yeah. It's a great site, though. Go to GatewayPundit.com. Good stuff there. Former ICE director Tom Homan says what's happening at the border isn't incompetence or mismanagement. What it is it's designed to create an open borders concept. He says ICE and CBP agents are handcuffed, they're allowing legal entry or releasing those that are apprehended after entering the country illegally. He says that personnel from both ICE and Customs and Border Patrol are feeling abandoned. Officials had met with the AP Biden administration officials before the inauguration. They told them basically that reversing policies or ending enforcement would result in a border surge like nothing that's ever been seen before. In fact, that is what we are seeing. It is records being set. He also pointed out the hypocrisy of the AP Biden administration, where they're still talking about mask wearing being encouraged or even mandated in some places. Social distancing is still being mandated. People are still being admonished for holding family gatherings and being urged not to until after July 4th. They point out, meanwhile, facilities down there, the Donna facility is the most famous, they're meant to hold 250 people. And at any given time, they are holding as many as 5,700 kids. No COVID precautions. Many have already tested positive for COVID. It also points out many are being released and actually encouraged to fan out across areas of Texas, for one. And it isn't, in his opinion, he says it isn't accidental or desperate. It's planned by continuing to, one, spread COVID in addition to expanding their voter base by getting these people in. They also seek to justify continued voting manipulation. You know, the allegedly necessary electronic voting or absentee or mail-in voting, which they use as a pretext for maintaining safety in the COVID pandemic. So, yeah, speaking of COVID, after continually overriding his state legislature's initiatives to abolish mask mandates. Wisconsin Governor Tony Evers kept reinstituting mandates anyway. His latest mandate was struck down by that state's Supreme Court. Oddly enough, 4-3. In a memo, Justice Brian Hagedorn pointed out that it wasn't whether or not Evers acted wisely, but whether or not he acted lawfully. Justices in this case determined that he did not. He delivered his initial one, his initial 60-day mandate, back in August. He kept extending it despite moves by both their House and their Senate. Back in February, he issued his latest one, 1 hour after lawmakers had voted to repeal his previous one. Yeah, that's not exactly a government working together, is it? No, it's not. The U.S., along with at least a dozen other countries, has questioned the integrity of the WHO study on the origin of the COVID-19 virus. They cited its delay, its lack of access to crucial data. According to an article in Epoch Times, a statement was released saying, in a nutshell, the countries support a transparent and independent analysis free from interference and undue influence. The other countries that attached themselves to this letter are Australia, Canada, the Czech Republic, Denmark, Estonia, Israel, Japan, Latvia, Lithuania, Norway, Slovenia, and South Korea. Don't know what's happening in the background there, but something is. I can't wait to see how that one goes, by the way, that little letter. What do I care? I'm vaccinated. Oh, by the way, I'm really digging this new 11th finger I picked up over the weekend. Just kidding. I have not picked up an additional finger or toe or anything else. It'd be kind of cool if I did. I would love it if I could suddenly, like, run a 40 and 4 flat or something, but basically, what their letter says, they joined, expressed shared concerns regarding the recent WHO convened study in China. They point out that study was basically closed. It wasn't an open study. The 10-member team that did go was met with obstructions. Two members were denied entry for visa issues. So, yeah, it sounds like now the WHO report doesn't make any firm conclusions. They said basically that the idea that it escaped from a lab is extremely unlikely, that the theory that the virus jumped from bats to humans is most likely. The head, Tedros Ghebreyesus, or whatever his name is, says he welcomes a full analysis, recommendations for further research, full analysis of the trade in animals. Look, I'm not saying that's not what happened, but it sounds like the idea that it was released from a lab is just being shoved aside. Meanwhile, other people have been saying that this is a lab situation, that it was released from a lab, whether intentionally or not. So, yeah. You know, it obviously needs to be brought out deeper. I mean, and at a certain point, who really even cares? It's not even a matter of, you know, now it's a matter of accountability. Hey, a couple new social media platforms are on their way. Coming in April, either the 5th or the 12th, is a site called Frank. It's a new site from MyPillow founder Mike Lindell. Says the platform, Lindell says the platform should be able to handle 1 billion users. Says it's being built to be safe and secure, since he basically expects attacks from other social media and big tech giants. He says it's a mix of YouTube and Twitter, and said the opening's been delayed due to the addition of more redundancy, with 6 servers being located in alternate places. Basically, in other words, he's worried of what's going to happen with, you know, servers being shut offline by providers, big tech providers. You know, it used to be you would whether it's a server or telecom or whatever, you would co-locate servers in places like phone companies and big internet carriers because, you know, one, they support the backbone, but two, they, you know, their server sites are robust. Things like lightning and, you know, hurricanes and tornadoes, et cetera, are much less likely to have impact. But now these places are places that are in cahoots with others and basically just shut you down. Amazon, Google, whoever, Facebook, if they're co-locating their servers or hosting your servers in the case of Amazon, you know, on a whim, they can shut your site down. Meanwhile, President Trump will be adding his own social media network. Details at this point are kind of meager, not a whole lot out about it. Okay, let's get to some sports news. This is good stuff. We have some good stuff today. The owners of the world's largest truck stop have provided an endowment to the University of Iowa Athletics Department. Henceforth, head coach Kirk Ferentz and all subsequent football head coaches will be known as the Moon Family Head Football Coach. Look, while that's kind of dumb in and of itself, it gets kind of idiotic when one remembers the Moon family of Reverend Moon cult fame. Yeah, I guess drinking the Kool-Aid is going to have some application again. No, actually, it wasn't Reverend Moon. It was Jim Jones that served Kool-Aid to his followers back in 1978 in Guyana. Anywho, the I-80 truck stop and travel center is this huge monstrosity of a truck stop off I-80 in Walcott, Iowa. I've been there many times. They actually had great biscuits and gravy back in the day. They also had a McDonald's that I would occasionally stop at. It's expanded even more since then. They've got 8 restaurants. They got movie theaters, a gym, a spa, Lord knows what else. T. Bodie says, Warren Moon, great QB, the throwin' Samoan. He was not the throwin' Samoan. Jack Thompson was the throwin' Samoan. But hey, we digress. But yeah, so the I-80 Truck Stop and Travel Center is now endowing the University of Iowa. The owners are Will and Renee Moon. They are Iowa graduates. Their $10 million gift comes in 3 components. $5 million is a general football endowment, $3 million for football and other athletic department initiatives as determined by the athletic director, who is the Tippy athletic director, and some guy named Tippy that endowed that. And then there's $2 million to renovate the north end zone seating and concourse at Kinnick Stadium. That's the same north end zone, by the way, where brother Tommy and T. Bodie and his brother and I and another watched Rob Houtland kick a game-winning field goal for the number one Hawkeyes over number two Michigan back in 1985. I would say T. Bodie and brother Tommy, you remember that, but I'm not so sure you guys do. I do, but I mean, yeah, you guys do. So if Iowa has an AD post and a head football coach whose positions are named after donors. I kind of hope to God these folks have some good recruiting connections. I mean, seriously, what better place, by the way, than a truck stop for players to take advantage of the upcoming name, image, and likeness stuff that we're going to be seeing? Stop by the truck stop and sign some autographs to purvey my name, image, and likeness. I mean, it's a huge place. Can't say that there wouldn't be traffic. I just don't think most truckers want to stop in just to get somebody's autograph. Speaking of the Hawkeyes, while Luca Garza is going on to the next phase of his career, his primary backup, Jack Nungy, announced yesterday he intends to transfer closer to his home in Indiana. The kid's had a rough couple of years, no doubt. 2 different season-ending knee injuries sandwiched around the tragic loss of his dad, Mark, last November. That was very sad. Meanwhile, point guard Jason Bohannon basically has no pro career waiting for him. Let's just be honest. Jason Bohannon has said if the Iowa legislature passes a name, image, and likeness bill this week, he will return to Iowa for a 6th available year. Man, do I have mixed feelings on that. I really do. Look, you can never have enough shooters. I get that. We're not going to discuss his defense. I'm not going to be negative about the kid. But what it does, it delays the development and the increased playing time for your younger players that are behind you. I mean, frankly, we need the next guys to be there and installed and step up. It could lead to other players leaving. It could hinder backcourt recruiting for a year or more, not to mention, like I said, backcourt development. So here's what it really sounds like, though. When a guy says, if we get this in this law, I'm going to stay, he's not staying for the team. He's literally staying to capitalize on the monetary aspect of it. There's no hey team in there. You know, Luka Garza came back for his team. Came back for his team to advance toward a championship. He came back for his team to have success on the court. What Jason Bohannon's saying, at least in his tweets, is that's really not about team for me. It's about name, image, and likeness and profiting off of it. Look, I don't want to go too much into the negatives or the positives in that regard. Look, I'm going to talk about it later. I'm going to have a guest on, a surprise guest. It just sounds cheapened when he does it this way. Speaking of basketball, Houston, we have a Final Four. And guess what? Houston, you're in it. Houston took out Oregon State Monday night to advance to the Final Four next weekend. Lucas Oil Stadium in Indianapolis. Baylor also advanced. They took out Arkansas. Look, while Baylor had a somewhat easy time they had a 9-point win. Houston squandered a 7-point lead. Oregon State actually tied the game briefly. They banked in a 3-pointer. It did not look pretty, but it tied the game. Houston sort of took control, and they went on to win 67-61. Last night, Gonzaga advanced, 19-point victory over USC. And then Michigan, they were the Big Ten's last hope. They went down to UCLA. UCLA becomes the second team to advance from the first four all the way to the Final Four. In fact, Virginia Commonwealth did it back in 2011, I believe. So this Saturday, we've got Baylor taking on Houston. And then Gonzaga goes against UCLA. Houston, by the way, becomes the first team to face all double-digit seeds in their regional. Yep. They opened with 15-seed Cleveland State as a 2-seed. And then from there, it became a comedy of upsets. Or not comedy. They took on number 10 Rutgers, who had beat number 7 Clemson. And they beat number 11 Syracuse and then number 12 Oregon State. Now, Gonzaga, there's a different story. They look to become the first team since Indiana, the 1975-76 Hoosiers, to go through a season undefeated on their way to an NCAA championship. Baylor looked rather beatable 2 or 3 weeks ago. Now they look as good as any team. UCLA is obviously a team nobody expected to be here. Should make some good watching this weekend, definitely Monday night. Look, at this point, I really think it's Gonzaga's to lose. A Gonzaga-Baylor matchup would be ideal. Remember, that game was scheduled back in December, and COVID issues derailed it, so they never faced off in the regular season. So this could be the matchup everyone was hoping for. Seems L.A. detectives have found the cause of the crash involving Tiger Woods and his SUV last month. However, citing privacy concerns for Tiger, they are not revealing the cause just yet. Retired New York City Police Detective Joseph Giacalone, he thinks it's pretty odd, and he says he wonders how they'll be able to prosecute should it come to that. He also told ESPN he doubts privacy would be much of a concern for non-celebrity types like, you, me, those listening to the show, us regular folk. He says though it's not saying that anything at all is bad enough, but what he really wonders, he says, when coupled with the statement that they need to discuss it with Woods and his team, it's doubly concerning. They got to say, I quite agree. Look, we all value privacy, but this is a public, you know, this happened on a public roadway. It's not like it happened, you know, I mean, it happened on a public roadway. If it's a medical episode, sure, I get it. You know, I mean, it needs to be handled and discussed properly, no doubt. But do we really think it presents a good look when it's done this way? No, we don't. Welcome A12 Iggy Mom back to the chat room, by the way, folks. The chat room is where it's happening. Indy Hawk, T. Bodie. These folks had a good discussion going last week during Jim's stint. No, it's just, it's not a good look. I mean, it sounds like maybe it's going in the direction he's not going to be prosecuted. That roadway is noted for other accidents. So maybe it's a speed limit issue that they need to have better posting. I don't know. I can't really say. But when they make it sound like we know, but we're not saying the cause, that's kind of like, look, if it were any of us, it would be out there right away. Charges would have already been filed. You know, you'd already be running up legal bills. Don't get me wrong. Tiger's going to be running up some legal bills here. I'm pretty sure of that. But it's just not a good look. It looks like favoritism, basically. And look, I talked earlier about Virginia Commonwealth. That team was led by a gentleman named Shaka Smart. He parlayed that into the Texas job. He shocked some folks recently. He up and left Texas after their NCAA tournament loss and took the job at Marquette. Yeah, I know. He was born in Madison, Wisconsin, but he hasn't coached in that state. He hasn't done anything there in a long time. It looked good for him at Texas. He was getting a little rumbling, but they won the Big 12 tournament. They got a good draw, a good seed, and then they lost him, probably lost to Abilene Christian. I think they were 3 seed or a 5 seed, and they lost to Abilene Christian, and then, it didn't go well from there. And so he took I don't know, I just don't get it. From Texas to Marquette. Look, Marquette has had some success there, but not widespread by any means. But look at Texas. Let's not forget, they dumped their head football coach, Tom Herman, after a 7-3 season this past season. He won the school's fourth consecutive bowl game. The attitude from the Texas athletic director, along with some of his statements, kind of led to the feeling that Herman's job was secure. Not so secure, in fact, that Tom Herman and his wife were starting a major home renovation project that had been mentioned, at least in passing, among the folks in Austin. And then suddenly he was gone in favor of Steve Cuddy Sarkisian. So I wonder, maybe he just figured it was time to step out. The job was there. It was open. He'll get support in Marquette. He's going against Wisconsin, but that's it. He's not going against any other programs that really make any noise other than like when Dick Bennett and Tony Bennett were coaching in that state. Dick Bennett's retired. Tony Bennett's at Virginia now. But Marquette isn't, they lost the Hauser brothers this past season. They opted to transfer out. So I wonder, why is he taking that job? Probably just getting out while the getting is good, I would guess. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk Poly Sports News. I welcome Banjo 80 also to the chat room. But we're going to take a quick break, a quick music break, and then we're coming back to some Poly Sports News. I'll have Hawkeye Mike will be on to talk about some of it. And just take a quick break, get you some water, get you some whatever it is you need. Be right back, folks. That is from the late, great Ennio Morricone from the movie Once Upon a Time in America, who, by the way, my guest, the first time I saw the long version of that was at our apartment in college. I didn't see the whole thing. Came in the middle of it, but my guest and brother Tommy watched it. I had seen the short version with brother Tommy, and so when you saw reviews of the short version and said it sucked, because it did. The long version, by the way, however, is an absolute masterpiece. Quick item before I bring in the guest. It's official. No fans, no volunteers, no outside coaches at the Olympics, the upcoming Olympics in Tokyo. While this may seem like overkill, it really hurts some of the athletes as well. A lot of outside coaches aren't on the coaching staffs of the countries. In addition, numerous athletes are coached by family members and or they have staff or supporters that they rely on to help them throughout a competition with equipment or whatever. One they talked about is an Indian long jumper whose father watches him during his meets and helps him retool his steps, that, you know, his takeoff point before he on his approach. Some of those guys, it's really going to affect them. So makes you wonder what the Tokyo Olympic Committee is thinking. I'm going to bring in my guest here, Hawkeye Mike. Mike, how's it going?
Pretty good. How you doing, Hank?
Good, good. We got some good stuff in the poly sports arena this week. Sorry about, of course, about the Hawks. That just brutal.
Yeah, yeah.
That was just brutal to watch. It was sad to watch Luka. Yeah, it was sad to watch Luka come off the court as well.
Oh yeah.
So this first one, you having served in the military as well as having your sister having served, your brother. The U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee has announced that raised fists, clenched fists, and kneeling during the national anthem will not be punished or sanctioned at this year's Olympic trials. They actually released a 9-page document on what will and won't be allowed. What do you think is the thought process there? It's gotta make you rather perturbed, I would think.
It's just a woke surrender, just another example of that. They don't want to, you know, they probably know it's going to happen. And so they think that if they signal that, you know, hey, that's cool, you know, maybe that'll just end a lot of grief for them. But I think that what's going to happen is that, and I don't, you know, do large segments of the population watch the Olympic trials? I don't know. Some do.
Yeah.
But if you see that going on, you know, the Olympic Games too, or, you know, it would be even worse at the Olympics, right? If they're up there on the podium, you know, it's like 1968 all over again, right? With, was it Tommy Smith and John Carlos?
Absolutely.
You know, it's even worse there because, you know, the whole world's seeing it, everybody's watching it. And these people are basically, you know, flipping the bird at the United States of America. And, you know, my personal view is, you know, I think it really stinks when this kind of stuff happens. And I wish the Olympic Committee would take a harder, you know, it could be, maybe it's a little reverse psychology. If they don't make a big deal about it, it won't happen. If they did make a big deal and say people, you know, this will not be tolerated, you might encourage people to do it, but I don't know. I think it's probably just cowardice on their part.
Yeah. Well, you touched on one thing about the International Olympic Committee. They do have issue with it. I think it's a combination of what you said, the wokeness, but also the fact it probably will not happen at the Olympics in Tokyo. There are a lot of athletes that have said, you know, we're there to compete. We're there for the experience. We were not there to argue social justice. We don't care where it is or who's arguing it. This is, you know, we're there to compete. So I think that's probably a big part of it, is that they're saying, get it out of your system now. And then politics ends at the border, so to speak. So, you know, you're not going to go overseas and embarrass our country or badmouth our country.
You can always hope. You can always hope, but I don't, you know, we'll see. But, you know, I think that, and this is the danger that, that could happen to a lot of sports. I mean, you've seen it, I think, to some extent already. It's like the way with Hollywood and with all those whenever there's a an awards, you know, whether it's the Oscars or the Grammys or whatever, those kinds of things have become almost unwatchable, and the ratings for those shows have just gone into the toilet because people don't want to listen to that crap or see people up there grandstanding about how terrible the United States is and how bad conservatives are and Republicans are and Trump is, and they just don't want to hear it. And if sports is becoming more and more that way, you're going to have the same thing happen.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. Which brings to the next story. Kristi Noem, the governor of South Dakota, you know, she vetoed that bill. There was a bill that she actually supported in the state legislature to prohibit biological males from competing as women. And she ended up vetoing it. What she wanted them to do is exempt college sports. And her worry, of course, was that the NCAA and the other corporate types would boycott the state. You know, so she vetoed it, and they didn't override it. Here's a problem, though, and I don't know specifically in this bill, but you know, we've talked about it before. In Connecticut, a kid in high school doesn't have to be a transgender female; he can just identify as female. You know, and there's a difference. I think people need to understand transgender. Or I'm not talking about somebody who's had surgery and then takes hormonal alterations. I'm talking about boys, for lack of a better term, putting on a wig and a skirt and competing against girls. And, you know, I kind of wonder how do you think, I don't know, I mean, none of us probably know what's going on in South Dakota per se. Can you believe it's a real thing? I mean, can the NCAA really do that, you know?
I suppose they could, you know, look, I've read some about this. It's gutless what happened here. She'd actually signaled a few weeks before that she would sign the bill, which probably encouraged the passage of the bill, and then she reverses. There's apparently some business interests, not just the NCAA, that concerns that come in here, and I was reading an article that some of her top advisors are pretty big in that realm, Chamber of Commerce and so on, and you know, maybe pressured her that, hey, you know, we're going to become the subject of business boycotts, and you know, the cancel culture will pick up, and it'll hurt South Dakota, and so she caved. And the same thing with the NCAA, you know, is it possible the NCAA would penalize South Dakota? I suppose it is. But, you know, people have to stand up to this stuff. And if she believes the bill was right, and I think that, you know, she'd indicated she did, I think the bill was right, she should sign it. And you know what? Maybe some of this stuff has to play out in court. Let's see what the court says. And maybe you have to stand up to these. Maybe you have to stand up to the NCAA. Maybe you have to stand up to the Chamber of Commerce and the woke crowd out there, rather than just rolling over on your side with your belly up and hoping that they'll be nice to you. But I think it's basically a gutless move by her. And she was called out I don't know if you saw it. She was called out pretty heavily by Tucker Carlson about a week ago about this.
Yeah, she was.
She was on his show. She trying to judge, and he was like, you know, WTF here? What are you doing?
Yeah.
I think it'll end up hurting her. Certainly, if she has any presidential or vice presidential ambitions. She was kind of the golden girl for a while there, but I don't know. This is a head scratcher to me. The legislature passed this law. There's a couple other states that have passed this law. I think it would have been a good thing to sign it. You know, I mean, look, the larger issue here is this influx of these transgender biological males into women's sports, and it's destroying women's sports, and it's destroying opportunities for women. And if you're one of these lefties and liberal, you know, feminists who champion Title IX your entire life, it's going to, you know, if you think that's so great, this is going to destroy it.
Absolutely.
How are you going to stop these people, and how do you stop these people from going into the LPGA?
Or
you know, women's tennis, or, you know, you name the woman's sport, because they can't cut it maybe in the on the male side, but maybe they could really excel. You know, you can't make the PGA Tour, but hey, you could be a star on the LPGA. And
yeah,
I mean, you're making it between people that have had procedures, and those are just basically putting a wig and a dress on. But you know, I you know, that's fair. I do think that even if you were a biological male and you're 6'2 and you're 200 pounds, and even if you go through a lot of the hormonal treatments and the surgery, you're still going to have a bigger frame and you still have the to a certain extent the muscle, you know,
absolutely
of a male as opposed to a woman.
Bone density, there's still that advantage.
But, you know, the funniest, and I think the really hit home type parody on all this was from, you know, it's from one of the, I know you know the movie, and it's one of my favorite movies called The Mighty Wind, where at the end of the movie, one of these three guys in this folk group decides to become a woman, and he's the bass singer. So he says, you know, he's transitioning, and he's become a woman, and he's wearing a wig. It's Harry Shearer. It's very funny. And they're up there singing a song, and the guy's still singing bass. I mean, that tells me everything. I mean, I still see that. It's got me on the floor. But it hits at home, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. There's a letter 500 in the NCAA calling for them to pull events from states that back these bans. Now, that's the right to sign that letter. I guess the government saw what happened to North Carolina after its bill, if you want to call it. We lost them.
Hank, you're breaking up there a little bit. Can I have you repeat that?
Yeah, I get that. You know, knows what happened in North Carolina after the bathroom bill. You remember the bathroom bill that
yeah,
you know?
You're breaking up. I'm afraid.
Okay, sorry. You hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah, basically they lost the state of North Carolina lost $3.8 billion dollars, they claim, in the from their bathroom bill. And so Governor Noem saw that, and 500 athletes. But, you know, here's the thing. This isn't about gay athletes, and it wasn't even about trans people in general. It's the gender equity under Title IX. I mean, that absolutely destroys it. Number one,
it does.
You know, I mean,
and, you know what you're saying about North Carolina, but think about that bill. That bill, my understanding was to keep, you know, who wants, you know, forget, you know, just your average woman either. Who wants to go in there with into a woman's public bathroom with your 5-year-old daughter, and some 6'2" clown in a, you know, dressed like a Corporal Klinger comes in and whips it out right there. I mean, and that's the kind of, I mean, you know, you, let's be blunt, that's the kind of thing that can happen when you have these kind of, you know, whichever, you know, whatever feels good as far as like whatever your gender is, and you can go into the women's room. And plus, I mean, think about the perverts, you know, hey, I'll just put a dress. I can just go walking in there and they can't do anything about it, you know, and I can have my jollies and stuff. And I think that bill was designed to prevent that. Of course, it got distorted as a, you know,
sure,
like with everything, as being anti you know, transgender. I'm not quite even sure what that means, you know.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing.
But yeah, I mean, it's crazy.
Here's the thing. If you require Title IX requires women to have competition, it doesn't mean that they have to compete against males. Sent me a video a while back of a transgender who competed in MMA, UFC stuff. Bone density is different. Her friend was harder to point out. She's the pulp. She's the pulp competition. You know?
Hank, I'm still having an issue here, and you're breaking up real bad.
Oh, sorry. I'm trying to manipulate here. You okay now?
I'm not sure what's going on. Yeah, I hear you better now.
Okay.
Sorry about that.
You know, look, in some cases, though, not only have trans you know, people beating these people, but males just identifying as females have, Connecticut high school is where it's really bad. I mean, there is literally no requirement. You know, the NCAA doesn't really specify requirements either. There's no quote unquote testosterone level that they require. There's no, you know, other for other hormones that they, you know, remember Renee Richards at least had to pass a chromosome test and usually didn't, usually failed it depending
right.
on, you know, where she took the test. I mean, you know, that's that in and of itself should tell you something, you know, that, that we've not really changed anything. So it's just kind of, I don't know. It's just, it's something I've seen in the news, and it's just, Steve Dace said it best. When you get to that point, it's no longer about equality or equity. It's a mental disease. And that's what it is. I mean, if you
I absolutely totally agree with that. I totally agree with that. I think it's, you know, they say, oh, you know, well, they used to say that about homosexuality, which, you know, fair enough. But here you're talking about going against, I mean, you know, like someone pointed out that, you know, you talk about someone who's the average gay person, a male homosexual, does not want to become a woman.
Right.
Exactly. We're talking about a completely different category here of somebody who is born a biological male or female, but in their mind believes they should or can or need to become the other sex. To me, and I know it's not politically correct, to me that is a mental issue, you know, a mental disease of some sort.
Yeah. I don't
totally,
doubt that there
totally
are people that are transgender, that there are people that truly are, quote unquote, you know, I get that. But I mean, you know, again, that's not what we're talking about female competitors who have now lost equitable competition when they allow this. T. Bodie pointed out something in the chat room. You know, there's a big positive, though. There's one that's been signed into law in Arkansas. Minors are not able to determine medical procedures for themselves. You know, teachers telling 8-year-olds that maybe you should be a woman, that's not going to happen, at least in Arkansas. So there's one positive, if you will, that's, you know.
Well, do you remember that deputy health secretary that got appointed by one of the first appointments by our new president? And her name's Rachel somebody. She was like the public health director in Pennsylvania.
She's a deputy director.
Transgender. Like I told somebody, she went from being an ugly man to being an ugly woman.
Yeah.
Not
and
sure what she gained from that. But
yeah,
anyway, and you know, from being an extremely ugly man to being an extremely ugly woman. But this woman, if you remember, in her hearing, could not give a straight answer to a question. I think it came from Rand Paul, maybe, about whether, you know, she believed that it was not right for a 10 or 12-year-old child to make a decision on transitioning. That's something that age is too young. Which I think 90% of the population, even today, would agree that really shouldn't be allowed. She would not. She would not.
Yeah.
She dodged.
She wouldn't even answer. She wouldn't even answer the question about puberty blockers for kids.
And we're not talking about an adult here. We're talking about, like, you know, minors.
Yeah.
This,
no,
you know,
we're talking about kids. I mean, we're literally,
you know,
talking
an
like elementary school
or
kids.
Something.
Yeah.
It's just crazy.
Yeah.
That's
no doubt.
What we have with this administration, isn't it great?
Yeah. Oh, I know. Well, speaking of, let's get to the next case that I wanted to talk about. So the Supreme Court heard arguments today in the case. It's called Alston versus the NCAA. Sean Alston was a former West Virginia football player who sued the NCAA. What he claimed was that the NCAA violates the Sherman Antitrust Act by placing limits on what each school is allowed to give its athletes in exchange for their athletic ability. So arguments were heard today. And basically, he's saying it prevents the athletes from cashing in on their true value. Have you followed, you know, I pointed you to it. Have you looked at it? Have you seen anything that jumps out about the case? Or?
Well, I did read the, or at least I wasn't that familiar with the case. you know, 10 years removed from my work in the federal courts, and, you know, I don't like yep. as part of my light reading to read cases anymore, but I did go and look at the case. I did go skim through the case, and, you know, as with a lot of these kinds of cases, it's somewhat complicated. I don't want to get into the – I'm probably not completely prepared to get into all the ins and outs, but the bottom line was that the Ninth Circuit, which is the last court to have issued a ruling, that's why it's up before the Supreme Court now, upheld the district court, the trial court decision that basically found that, as you pointed out, that the restrictions by the NCAA, at least to a large extent, violated the Sherman Antitrust Act. And they did, there is some nuance to the case. They found that certain types of restrictions that related basically strictly to like cash deals were capable of being regulated and restricted by either the NCAA or conferences or I think even individual universities, but that in most instances other types of you know, benefits that they might get, that the way the NCAA had it was too restrictive and too and violated the antitrust law, and so under that case, that's opened up a lot of, you know, potentialities, college athletes being able to you know, basically barter for their services. I kind of have mixed views on this. I mean, you want to, you know, on the one hand, college has always been, you know, the amateur sports, right? And,
yeah.
And, you know, you start conflating it. And of course, I'm kind of thinking that one of the reasons you wanted to talk about this in particular was because a certain Iowa basketball player has been kind of prominent in wanting to get paid and everything. And has even made it said that he might be willing to come back for a sixth year at
yeah.
Iowa. If I think the state legislature's got some bill that he wants them to pass about compensation for a college student. Look, I mean, you know, let's be clear though. College sports is a big business, and we're talking billions of dollars, TV deals, universities make tons of money, coaches get paid, you know, unbelievable amounts.
Yes,
and
they do.
It's you can argue it's sort of at the expense of the college athlete. Who makes, you know, who's basically what people come to see, who does the work, and these people kind of take advantage of them, and they don't get anything. But I would point out that a couple things. They, you know, scholarships, especially in this day and age with the price of college, is not exactly nominal value. It's a pretty valuable thing.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Also, you know, if you're good at it, it sets you up for the big bucks just a couple of years down the road when you go pro.
Absolutely.
But, you know, and that seemed to be the happy medium, you know, like with a lot of things, I guess, in society now, for years and years. And in the last few years, there's been this pushback by players that think they should be compensated and at least haven't been to the extent they want to be. You know, so I don't know. I would hate to see and then I'll get to in a second here about the Supreme Court, but I would hate to see, you know, amateur sports just basically, you know, conflated into, you know, minor leagues for the pros. And, I mean, I guess that's, some extent that happens, but it'll really happen if they can just make money. Just, I think it'll transform college athletics, particularly football.
Yep.
If you go too far, what will the Supreme Court do? Well, it's really hard to predict. You know, I would point out that there was, you know, for years and years, Major League Baseball uniquely had an antitrust exception based on a case that came, well, there was a case that was around World War I time that started the whole thing. Baseball's not subject to the antitrust laws, but it was reconfirmed in 1970 in a famous case called Flood versus Kuhn.
Yes, Kurt
Flood. Kuhn was the right, and it basically said that baseball. You know, a lot of people, I have to do it myself too. That baseball wasn't really a business; it was a sport. And as such, you know, and that was the main. Now, all the other sports, the NFL, the NBA, NHL, were all, you know, somehow businesses and sports. But baseball had had this unique antitrust exception, and it was extended in that, I think the decision came out in 1970 in that famous case. Now, since that time, the laws have changed a bit, and also the cases, and I think there's, can't remember the name of the case in the Supreme Court. Basically, that's gone away now, and baseball's subject to the antitrust laws. But you had that for 70 years. And so what will the Supreme Court do here? It's really hard to predict. I think that my guess is it's probably going to uphold what the Ninth Circuit said. Mostly, but it could be that you get five of the conservatives that say, look, we want to preserve the character of amateur athletics and this will destroy it. So it'll be very, very,
yeah, in their questioning, they questioned, I know, whether amateurism is an essential part of the NCAA's business model. And then they said at the same time that they acknowledged that there are concerns about judicial rulings that could create a slippery slope that would lead to obliterating, quote, a national tradition. So obviously they know that it's a balancing act. But what, I mean, how soon do you think we'll hear? I mean, typically, how soon will we hear something?
I think we'll hear that with oral argument today. We're in March. It'll probably be there's usually a slew of opinions that come out in the last part of June, right before the court adjourns for the summer.
Okay.
And so I would anticipate probably late June that we'll get a decision.
Yeah. Here are the concerns I have. Revenue sharing, look, it could, you know, if they talk about revenue sharing, that could endanger the future of the game. You know, number one, it's not necessarily equitable, and it's not viable at a lot of schools. It's not sustainable. You know, P5 and P6 schools in football and basketball, yeah, it's a little more palatable for them, but, you know, it's not in the MAC schools and rural schools. There's no way they can sustain it. And frankly, how well are they going to be able to monitor it? I mean, do you really see the folks in Columbus or Tuscaloosa or Austin making sure that it's all legitimate? You know, I mean, Steve Dace made the point, let them make money off their name, image, and likeness, because you already have a group called the IRS that monitors income, you know, taxability. But
Right. Athletic
departments, and frankly, you know, we've talked about it, do you really see the catcher on the women's softball team at Ball State getting much name, image, and likeness money? You know, I mean, I just don't see that. I don't see that happening.
No, I mean, it's going to, you know, the question is whether those in college sports who can make, you know, something out of their name and, you know, because of their status, you know, and primarily they'll be male, you know, football players, basketball players, should be allowed to do it. You know, they're trade on their name and their likeness, you know.
Yeah.
Also the old thing about how it used to happen, you know, it would result in sanctions from the NCAA, alumni being very generous toward, you know, star players. And, you know, hey, you know, pick a car, you know, pick an apartment, you know, everything, you know. You know, maybe it's a slippery slope. Remember how the Olympics used to be, you know, strictly amateur, you know. Of course,
in the Western Bloc, we
couldn't play, NBA players and NHL players can play. But, of course, the pros in the East Bloc who were subsidized and got everything they wanted were deemed to be amateurs. And, you know, I mean, so in a way that just kind of rectified things. But you know, they, for a long time there was this fiction about we don't allow, you know, if you do anything, you know, you can't compete in Olympic sports. And that's all changed. And I don't know, maybe we're on a slippery slope here. It will be interesting. I think the Supreme Court, you know, it would be interesting if the Supreme Court came out and overturned the Ninth Circuit and said, no, the NCAA has the right to have these restrictions. And by the way, the NCAA is fighting this very, very fiercely.
Yeah.
And has been. If they go the NCAA's way, is that just going to be a temporary thing before? I don't know. I mean, you know, before
the,
it basically we're on a slope.
The NCAA has said they want they want Congress to do something on a federal level because you have all these different states that are doing stuff. So that's problematic,
right.
Obviously. The other thing, though, the argument for keeping the players not paid, we say education should be enough. But you know what? Big Left itself devalues education when they do stuff like, let's get rid of student loan debt. Let's eliminate it. Let's forgive it, whatever. Pretty soon sports won't even be necessary to get a college education for that segment because it's like, number one, what good will an education be if everybody has it, if there's no competition? And two, what's the incentive for people to teach at places where it doesn't cost? I mean, I see that collapsing.
And the freedom-loving capitalist in me does kind of feel like if a player can make something out of their name because of what they've done, why should we try to block it?
Yeah. Well, T. Bodie makes the point. Allow it. Put it in an escrow account. If you graduate or you stay for a minimum of 3 years, you subtract those fees and you pay the athlete the difference. In baseball, college baseball.
That's not a bad idea at all.
College baseball, if you leave – You can leave, obviously, after high school. If you leave after your freshman year, you're exempt. But if you leave after your sophomore or junior year, you from your contract, they can deduct the amount of that scholarship from your first contract. That's an agreement, I think, that Major League Baseball has with colleges. It's already – some precedent's already being set.
And you know what? That could particularly revitalize college basketball because, what's the biggest thing in the last 20 years? Is these teams, these players coming in playing 1 year and then going to the NBA.
Yeah.
And it's just, you listen to Vital or anybody talk about how it's really damaged.
Yeah, and you can go
football.
The other side of it.
I think it's
go
gotten a little better, but the NBA Players Association would not cooperate like to some extent the NFL and other sports have, Major League Baseball. Well, not so much Major League Baseball because there you have the minor leagues, but the NFL in particular, which is basically, I think, can't remember what it is, 2 or 3 years in college before you're eligible for the NFL draft.
3 years after your high school
and be 21 or something like that.
Yeah.
Right.
There's the other side too, though. Look, tutors in college, tech nerds, artists, music students, they can all make money. A kid that's at Iowa on a music scholarship, he's allowed to sell music lessons. He's allowed to play at the Crow's Nest, as we used to go to.
Get a recording contract if they can.
Yeah, they're allowed to do that. But remember Greg Anthony from UNLV years ago? He had a T-shirt business while he's on scholarship. He wasn't even allowed to make money off his T-shirt business. Now that, we can't sit there and say that the NCAA has kept clean hands in all this. I mean, they've certainly not been consistent in that regard. So there's not, it's a tough issue, but I think for those of us of our vintage, if you will, it's a tough thing to think about the NCAA going to a format where, every player can make money, and will there become a minimum? You have minimums in the NBA, there's a minimum contract in the NFL. Are we going to have that? Is the kid that, is every kid going to be given a minimum? That's a tough call. I don't know.
I meant to ask you too. What do you think about Jordan Bohannon coming out and saying, if they pass that law that allows, compensation for college basketball players, I'll come back and play another year. What does that say about his confidence in how he can do in the NBA? why would you even be thinking about that? You've been through 5 years. Go to the NBA.
Sadly, I think that one, he knows.
Or Europe,
I mean, I don't know if it's injuries that he had, but sadly, I think he knows that there's no NBA contract in his future, number one. Number two, though, really sounds bad to me is that it's like, if they'll pay me, how does that sound to, his teammates would be allowed the same thing, of course, but how does that sound, if you're a teammate, you kind of question his motive, number one. Number two, how's Joe Toussaint feel? Joe Toussaint's lost playing time to Jordan Bohannon in these last couple of years. He's got to be bummed out.
And I think, you know, and you probably feel even stronger about this than I do, but I do feel like Bohannon kind of was just going through the motions so much this year, you know?
Yeah,
and,
I agree.
You know, because I think he's pissed about not getting paid. And he's just, you know, he just didn't seem to have the you know, what he used to have. And there's really no reason why, but he just, it's other than, like, he acts like he doesn't care sometimes to me. That's kind of the impression I get.
Yeah, he also went through a COVID issue, though, I mean, in his defense. So maybe he's just kind of thinking, like, geez, I went through COVID, and yet they ramp us right back into a season. You know, maybe he didn't get enough recovery. I don't know. Who knows what his motivation. I mean, his tweets and some of his statements certainly don't sound like, quote unquote, team first. So as a fan,
no,
I'm not thrilled about the idea. On the other hand, you know what? A guy that can shoot like him, kind of not bad to have the idea of a guy that can still be a sharpshooter for certain games. You know, I mean, you can't, you know, I mean, let's put it this way. If Luka Garza decided to stay, would you be upset?
No.
Like,
you know, look, if Bohannon decides for whatever reason to come back, all right, fine. I won't get super excited about it. No,
definitely not. But yeah, you got to wonder. He just doesn't sound like it doesn't sound like a team first thing. And it sounds like I can't make money because what's he going to make? You know, what's any player, especially in the beginning stages, what's a guy going to make signing autographs at JR Records down in the old Capitol Mall, you know? I mean, I just don't see it. I don't.
You know, he's probably looking too more at a career in Europe if he's going to play pro ball than in the NBA, so which would be it's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah.
But, you know, we'll see.
And maybe, you know, though, really, you know, he did have two hips. Maybe he really understands that he's not going to – that his body can't hold up. So in that case, I get it. Then if he wants to stay, get an extra year, whatever. But yeah, the look, it doesn't look good. The look is not good, the way he said it. It doesn't look good.
And maybe that's a good argument, because I think there's, you know, one of the better arguments for why you should allow more compensation, better compensation for college athletes is exactly for those people that may have good college careers and could make some money, but they really aren't going to cut it at the next level.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's football or basketball, you know, that gives these guys an opportunity to maybe get something for their, you know, what they're doing.
And that's why I would understand the football argument in that regard, because football, man, it's NFL, maybe CFL, but basically that's it. I mean, you're not going to make money in a football career outside those two. That you're going to make very minimal. I mean, you're going to have a second job, so to speak. Basketball, you can make money over in Europe and in, you know, even in like in Israel and Greece and places like that have good, solid, you know, Aaron White from the Hawkeyes, he's making good money over in Russia, and I think he's in Germany now, but, I mean, he's making good money over there. You know, basketball players have a lot more opportunity on a worldwide scale than football players do. So, and frankly, football players are a lot more susceptible to major injury. I mean, you know, so you could almost make the argument in football that there should be, you know, and frankly, you know what? The other side of it, you know, cause some of these players are now graduating in 3.5 and 4 years because they're doing summer school, because football is year round for them. So it's, I mean, there's a lot on both sides. I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I fear that we're seeing a change, but maybe it's not necessarily for the worst, but I don't know. You know, when politics gets its hand into sports money, I don't think it can be good. That's just my feeling, but who knows? I could be totally wrong.
When politics gets into anything, it tends to destroy it.
Yeah.
Like sometimes the whole thing with the COVID stuff, right, is when science and politics collide, politics wins every time, even though the people that are doing the political stuff are saying what they're doing is in the name of science. Turns out to be a complete hypocrisy.
Yeah, absolutely. It totally does. And we're still seeing that. I mean, how many people, you know, I don't know if you heard last week, I got the COVID vaccine because it was a pop-up site. I had the opportunity to do it. It's the Johnson & Johnson one shot. Even in spite of the fact that I said I probably won't do it. I did it because it was easy, you know, path of least resistance. But you know what?
Well, it's a, you know, hopefully it's a path to normality, right? I mean, if nothing else, I'm getting my shot Saturday.
Yeah, but do you think, do you see us all shedding the masks by the end of April? I don't. You know, we're still hearing that it might not be safe to gather in July. That's insane. Really? I mean,
well,
we're talking
almost
18 months.
It is insane. But I think the argument is that, well, you know, even if you've been vaccinated, you could still, you know, people that haven't been are still vulnerable. Although I don't know what the science is on vaccinated people who are asymptomatic anyway, or you know, maybe they already had it and now they're negative, you know, transmitting that to anybody. But I do know this, masks outdoors are ridiculous.
Yeah, no doubt. Totally ridiculous.
There's no science to say, you know, and you're out, even in a crowd now, I think, you know. And, of course, by the way, when our cities were jammed with hundreds of thousands of protesters all summer in every major American city almost because of George Floyd, you didn't hear anything about that being a super – those being super spreader events.
Yeah. In that regard, you know, the fact that they haven't said there wasn't transmission – leads me to believe that there was, you know, I mean, if there wasn't transmission,
yeah,
we would have heard it. We would have heard that they were being safe and masking up and because of it, it's safe. And this is proof. We didn't hear any of that probably because the transmission was just as bad for that stuff as it was for any place else. So,
But you know, one thing I would say about the vaccine though, is I feel like once I get it and, you know, I'll have to get a booster. I'm getting the 2-shot thing.
Yeah.
But once that happens and, you know, a week or two goes by, whatever they say you need to wait, my view is I'm bulletproof, at least as much as is possible in this world. And, you know, if anybody wants to give me dirty looks, if I'm walking around outside in particular, because I'm not wearing a mask, you know, well, you know.
Oh, I agree.
You know,
totally.
You can shove it. And as far as going indoors, my view is this: I won't feel compelled to wear a mask if the requirement of the establishment you're going into is that you wear a mask. You do it because, you know, that's, they have the right to say whatever they require, whatever they want. I guess if you don't like it, you can you know, go somewhere else. But that might be the way that you end these mask mandates, because once these states, like I think, is it Florida doesn't have a mask mandate. A lot of other states now are getting rid of theirs. But businesses,
it still does.
Businesses keep them. Well,
yeah,
you know, if a business is still insisting on masks, go to a competitor. That's the quickest way to get these people to get rid of mask mandates.
Exactly. Exactly. So, okay, one last thing before we got to cut it short. Who do you pick? Who's your pick for the Final Four?
To the ultimate winner?
Yeah, who do you see in the final?
I think it's going to be Baylor, Gonzaga, and I think Gonzaga's going to do it.
Yeah,
first,
I agree.
32-0, first time since Indiana 76.
Yep, I agree. I think it's Gonzaga's to lose at this point. So, well, cool. Well, mate, thanks for being on. I appreciate the insight and the input. Hopefully we'll hear sooner rather than later what the NCAA is going to do. I think we're going to start seeing – I think what the Supreme Court does, I think we'll start seeing quicker activity in Congress and in some of the states then when that does happen. So hopefully it starts to lead to some kind of resolution. So
that's
cool. Well, have a good week, man. Good luck with your vaccine.
You bet, Hank. Always a pleasure. Take care.
Thank you. Thanks for being on. We'll talk to you later. Okay, folks, there you hear it. My resident attorney for these kind of stuff, Hawkeye Mike, he makes some good points on what the NCAA will do or can do. And on the Ninth Circuit of Court, you know, which is the last one that upheld the initial decision, it'd be interesting to see what the Supreme Court says, what Congress ends up doing, and how much change we end up seeing in the college sports. That's for sure. So, hey, y'all have a great week. Like I said before, go to Epic Times and go to Gateway Pundit. Those are the type of places that are being having their YouTube channels demonetized, having their Twitter accounts and their Facebook accounts knocked off. So go to those places. Go to those sites. You know, they rely on advertisers, and those rely on they rely on traffic. So the more traffic they can see, the better. So, folks, y'all have a good week. Go Zags, I guess. Talk to y'all later. I forgot to mention, I want to thank Indy Hawk KB, T Bodie, Banjo 80, and A12 Iggy Mom for being here in the chat room. We had Sue from New Mexico, brother Tommy, T Bodie, Mike, of course, sister, big sister, all listening in on the phones. Folks, you have a great week. God bless. Good night.